Today's talk, I thought I would talk about truth. Because I think this is a fairly relevant topic for a place like Second Life, because we're dealing with a lot of illusion and potential falsehood. I think it's an important subject and something for us all to think about. We come into a place like Second Life, and I think there are two related but different aspects of this place, and one is the illusion. One is illusion and the other is falsehood. So illusion can often be innocuous. It doesn't have to be an immoral thing. There's a lot of illusion here that you might say is in many ways positive. The illusion of being able to see each other, for instance, the illusion of us sitting here together, can in many ways have a benefit. It can give us this sense of community, and can really direct our attention towards the task at hand. It allows us to envision things and to often create and work out things in a way that might otherwise not be possible. Illusion is something which we have in our daily life. The illusion of solidity is all around us, and it's totally necessary. If we didn't perceive things as an object, as what they were, if we didn't put things together as being this entity or that entity in terms of food, or in terms of dangers, then we wouldn't be able to survive. So Buddhism is very much about truth, but doesn't deny the importance of concepts, the importance of illusion, or the importance of the construct. So in many ways, Second Life is simply a construct. The problem, of course, with Second Life comes when we get into falsehoods, when we start to become something that we're not, when we hide things that we are, when we start running away from reality and trying to portray ourselves as something other than what we are. And I'd like to explore this topic a little bit. I think it's open to some debate, but I think there are some moral issues here. And by moral, I don't mean anything that's objectionable. I'm never talking about something that's objectionable to other people. I'm talking about something which causes suffering and mental upset for the individual who undertakes it. Things are immoral in Buddhism not because of what other people think of you, or how other people judge you, but they're immoral because of the suffering they cause for you, because of how they warp your mind, because of how they take you away from reality, take you away from the truth. So a lot of it seems innocuous. It seems to be something that's just a game, just for fun. And it's an interesting thing about games that they are generally not innocuous. If you think back to when we used to play board games, when we used to play Monopoly. I don't know if anyone still plays Monopoly anymore. Probably we now play virtual Monopoly or something like that. 3D Monopoly, I don't know. No, I'm sure there are still people who play it. But back when we used to play Monopoly, we would get very competitive, right? And it's certainly not innocuous. Sports, even more so. It becomes a bravado thing. I remember when we used to play sports, and it was very macho, and the adrenaline gets going and so on. And you see, I'm from Canada, so we have a big hockey tradition up there, and it's certainly not just a game, right? They beat each other, and you know, it's part of the game. So these are good examples that we should then bring over into something like Second Life. When we start looking at it as a game, or when we use that as an excuse. I mean, most of us, I think, don't see it simply as a game. We see it as a life, as a part of our lives. But I think the in many ways we rationalize our falsehoods in this way we use the game mentality, or we evoke this. Oh, it's just for pretend. And again, the problem here is that it can often take us away from what is real, and it makes things easy. It allows us to escape many of our problems. So we have problems in real life. Well, look at on Second Life, none of those problems exist. And I think this is indicative of, or not indicative, this is... this exists in all parts of our discourse with or our interaction with the computer. The computer is a tool that has become a means of getting very quick and very direct pleasure. We have this very easy gratification system, and I think it's exemplified by the iPhone or the iPad. Now, I've used them a little bit, but I'm not thinking of when I use them. I'm looking at how it's arisen and how the interface works. I mean, you have these big buttons. It's like a toy. It's like a child's toy, right? I mean, way back when, Windows was so cool because it was so many, there were all these intricate parts to it. But now it's become push. You know, there's someone showed me recently an iPhone application with a cat. And I'm sure some of you have seen this app if you're into the iPhone. It's a cat, and what do? You speak, and it speaks it back only in cat voice. And if you rub the cat, it laughs, and if you push it, if you poke it, it groans. You know, computers have become an easy way around many of the difficulties in life. An easy way to forget about some of the real, very real problems. And what they do then is they create pleasure, stimulus, and addiction. Because the real problem that comes with getting what you want is that then you're cultivating want, you're cultivating desire. Then whenever you don't get what you want, or whenever it's not present, you have to seek it out. And you wanted it more and more and more. You're trying to get it again and again and again. And I think this relates directly to our creating of secondary personalities, or becoming who we really would like to be here, and trying to be something that we're not. And I'm not saying that this is indicative of everybody's life in Second Life. I think there's a lot of good that can be done here, because you are freed from many of the unnecessary stigma and many of the problems that exist in real life. So you are able to get along a lot better, and you are able to get closer to people in many ways. I'm only bringing this up. I think it's an important thing for us to look at, because there is an aspect of our lives that aspect of our existence here that somehow leads us to dualism, leads us to leading a dual life, where we get to the point where we have to make a choice. Are we going to be the same person as we are in real life, or are we going to become a different person. And I would like to recommend that we don't separate these two. And why this really came to me is because looking around or walking around, I always get this sort of fear of talking to people, or this hesitancy to really get in and talk to people, because you don't really know who they are. They could be a man in real life and in a woman's body in this life. They could be old and in a young person's body, or so on. And you run the risk of getting into, you know, some kind of fantasy relationship. And I found that I was really relieved and excited when I would read people's profiles telling me who they were in real life and saying, you know, this is who they really were, and not presenting themselves here as something other than what they are in real life, but, you know, using Second Life as a means to extend their real life and to meet people that they wouldn't be able to meet in real life. Truth is a very important thing in Buddhism. And there's a reason for this, because truth and wisdom, truth and understanding is what sets you free from suffering. The suffering and the problems in our life are very much like knots in a rope. The only problem with the rope is that it's tied up in knots. There's nothing wrong with the quality or the material. There's nothing wrong with the rope. You can take the most wonderful rope, and when you tie it up into knots, it becomes useless. And our mind is the same. Our life is the same. We tie ourselves up in these knots and in these tangled webs that we weave. And this has an effect on our minds. This takes away from our purity and takes away from our peace and our happiness. And personally, I would much rather see the real thing, that we are who we are, and that we come to look at who we are. And we be careful that we don't run away from these things. I think this is important here if we're going to use Second Life as a tool to develop in the Buddhist practice. So truth is a lot like untying the knots, or truth is like keeping yourself untied, or keeping yourself from getting entangled. When you see things as they are, this is untying the knots of existence. Our knots, our ties, are what keeps us attached to things, what keeps us attached to our addictions, what keeps us attached to our aversions, our depressions, our fears and our worries. All of these things, they come from untruth. They come from the lies that we tell ourselves and the lies that we tell other people, when we believe things to be other than what they are, when we see things as being more than what they are. And so while there's nothing wrong with the illusion of Second Life, you know, take a second to look for yourself. What are you looking at here? What are you looking at? You're looking at a piece of glass or plastic and some brightly colored lights. These are just pixels that you're looking at. That's the reality of it. And in fact, it's not even out there, it's at the eye. What you're seeing is being processed on the skin of the eye, or inside the eye, or even in the middle of the brain, because that's where it's being processed. We don't actually see at the eye, we see in the middle of the brain somewhere. And there's nothing wrong with using these illusions to settle ourselves down and verify for ourselves, where are we? Here we are sitting together, listening to a meditation talk around the campfire in front of the Buddha in a deer park. There's nothing wrong with that. That's very good preliminary. But if that becomes then your life, where you say, boy, I really enjoy being in this deer park, and you know, this really just makes my day, well, then you've got a problem. You're living a falsehood. We use the illusions for a purpose. But in the end, the most important for us is going to be to see the truth. And to look and to see, well, why is it that I enjoy being in this deer park? Why is it that these pixels on this screen are able to create this pleasure in my brain? They're able to stimulate my brain and give rise to certain chemicals that then make me feel pleasure. And then we start getting into the truth. Then we start to penetrate the truth. So we don't have to deny the illusion and say, no, I'm not sitting in a deer park. But we have to go the next step and say, oh, what happens? What's happening here? What's really happening? And we have to look and we have to take it apart to be able to say to ourselves, this is what's real. This is the truth. For this reason, it's very important that we don't get caught up in falsehood. We don't get caught up in the illusion. So the meditation practice is a tool that we use to see things as they are. It's a tool that we use to break away from the illusion and to see the illusion for what it is. This is illusion, this is real. The reality is this. Everything outside of that is illusion. It has its place, but it only goes so far. And the way we do this, as I've said again and again, is to remind ourselves. This word that we have, we say mindfulness. The meaning of mindfulness is to remind yourself. You're reminding yourself of the reality of the situation, the reality of the experience. What's really happening here? Not what do I think is happening, what do I believe, what is my view, what is my religion, what is my way of looking at things. What's real? And when we start to do that, we'll see many things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to see. We'll see many things going on in our minds. Right here. You see, you're not actually sitting at this campfire. You're here in a room, all alone. Maybe you're lonely. Maybe you're depressed. Maybe you don't like what I'm saying and you're upset. Maybe you're sitting on a hard chair and it starts to get uncomfortable. Maybe you're sitting on a soft chair and your back starts to hurt. Maybe it's too hot. Maybe it's too cold. Maybe you're thirsty. Maybe you're hungry. Maybe you're sick. Maybe you're at peace with yourself. There could be many different things happening inside, happening in your experience. And so what we do in the meditation practice is we remind ourselves of what's happening. We remind ourselves of what these things are, of what's really going on. Suppose you like what I'm saying, then you say to yourself, liking, 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 and you just remind yourselves, oh, now I'm liking something. If you feel happy, you say, happy, happy. If you don't like what I'm saying, you say, disliking, disliking. Unhappy, unhappy. Sad, sad. Bored, bored. See, because I can't make you bored, and I can't make you happy. You can only do that for yourself. You're not hearing me speak. You can't even hear the words I'm saying. What you hear is an electronic representation, it's an analog representation of a digital representation of my analog transmission. And where it's occurring is at your ear. And where you're processing it is in your mind. So how can I do anything to you? I can make you hear noise if I make a noise, if I clap my hands. I can make sure that you all heard that. If you were all paying attention, then most likely you all heard that. But I can't make you feel happy or unhappy about it. I can't say, I'm going to say something and everyone's going to like what I say. And I also can't say something to you and make you feel angry about it. I can't call you bad names and be sure that you're going to be upset. Though if you're an ordinary person, I could probably do a good job at it. It's not in my power. And the reason I can make you angry easily is because we're mostly, most of us, prone to anger. Most of us don't like to be criticized and so on. But in the end, the reality of it is you're making yourself happy or unhappy. You're hearing what I say, you're processing it, and you're saying, oh, that's nice, or oh, that sucks. You're doing that to yourself. And we do that this with everything. There's nothing intrinsically wonderful about sitting here staring at some pixels that happen to look like a deer and bonsoir. A tree and an ocean and a Buddha. There's nothing special about it. But we make it special. We say, oh, this is wonderful. We feel very happy. When someone yells at you and says nasty things, there's nothing nasty about the sound. The worst it can do is break your eardrums if it's really, really loud. And even that, there's nothing wrong with that. Until it gets in your mind, oh man, now I can't hear anymore, my eardrums are busted. Or when you hear me say nasty things, you say, oh, what a jerk. What nasty things he says. You do it to yourself. So meditation is taking that power away, taking that reflex away from the equation. When we see something, instead of saying this is good, you know, one is this, two is, three good, this is good, we turn it back on ourselves and we say this is this. You know, seeing is seeing. Seeing this is seeing this. We remind ourselves, re-mind, we bring the mind back. We don't let the mind go forward. Seeing is what? Seeing. Hearing is what? Hearing. So we say to ourselves, seeing, seeing. When we hear something, hearing, hearing. Pain is pain. Anger is anger. Greed is greed. It is what it is. It can't escape that. The things in our mind, in our body, and in the world around us, they can't escape their real nature. It's the one thing we can be sure of, is that they are what they are. It's the one thing we can be sure of, and this is interesting in meditation, because in the many religious traditions, people claim to see this or see that, you know, scientists and atheists and skeptics in general are always like, well, can you be sure that what you saw, that's what you really saw? Can you be sure, you know, someone that I saw God? And you say, well, how do you know it was God? I felt, you know, like I was in heaven. Or these people say, I saw a bright light at the end of the tunnel. And this guy says, that's because you've got tunnel vision, you moron. Sorry, that's a quote. Those weren't my words. No, I actually do believe in this this tunnel, seeing a tunnel and a bright light at the end, because there's a lot more to it than just seeing a tunnel, and there's some very interesting clinical studies that have been done, that have been documented. Yes, so it's a good example in the sense that. You know, you're interpreting that as being the path, the stairway to heaven or something. You know, you don't really know that. And interesting about it is, if you look at, in say, the Tibetan tradition, from what I understand, and I don't know a lot about the Tibetan tradition, is that these bright lights are negative. They're a bad thing. And that's very Buddhist. It's a really good, important teaching. When you die, you're going to see bright lights. Don't chase after them. Don't go near them. Don't cling to them. Because those bright lights are your mother's womb, the next rebirth. Don't go into the light. So you see, you know, you it's very easy to interpret things in a certain way and say this is good, this is bad. The reason they say that is you know, you're going to cling to it. And you don't know what that light is. It could be a human womb, it could be a dog womb, it could be a deer womb. You don't know. That's a very good example in terms of interpreting things. You know, the things that we experience in meditation or in near-death experiences and so on. They are what they are. And this is how a Buddhist gets out of that. You know, what is different about Buddhism? You know, Buddhism has these experiences. We have these experiences of bliss and seeing bright lights and seeing angels and so on. How do we avoid this, this dilemma? You know, the religious dilemma of proving that we see what we see. And I think I've already answered this, and it should be clear that, you know, Buddhists don't go beyond the seeing. What you can confirm is that you're seeing something. No one can take that away from you and say, no, you didn't see anything. There was no experience of seeing there. And this is important, because in science they will say that. They will say you didn't see anything. Why? Because your eyes aren't working, or your brain wasn't working. There are cases of people who went into cardiac arrest for minutes and had near-death experiences. Now, this is impossible from scientific point of view, because you go into brain death after something like 20 seconds. There's zero brain activity. Zero. Something like that. I'm not a scientist, and so I don't know. I'm not in Western terms, anyway. But, I'm reading the scientific studies, and after about 20 seconds, after about 5 seconds, you're brain dead. You aren't able to think, according to science. The brain isn't able to function. But after 20 seconds, there's no chance. There's no activity whatsoever. It's not only you're not able to think, but the brain is just not functioning. And yet people will have these experiences, and what makes them interesting is because people will recount afterwards when they come back, listening to the doctors talk, watching the doctors do things, seeing the doctors operate on them. There's this one patient who passed away, was passing away, and came back and claimed to see the surgeon flapping his arms like a chicken while she was out. Now this doctor had a peculiar habit of flapping his hands like a chicken. Disinfect his hands before operating, and then he'd place them on his chest and give instructions with his elbows, because he was, you know, in order to make sure that he wouldn't touch anything. And so it looked like he was flapping himself like a chicken. So he was doing this well after she had gone into brain death. So there's a very strong case for the idea that seeing is seeing. That we can be sure when you see something, that should be considered seeing. Whatever science wants to say that, no, it's just an illusion. Well, an illusion of what? Or an illusion in what form? You know, how can you say that it's not seeing when there's an experience of seeing? So this is sort of a roundabout, but it's talking, trying to explain what I'm talking about here in terms of reality, in terms of the truth. Truth is very important in Buddhism, and that's the lesson that I would like to impart today. I think I've gone for 30 minutes now, so I'm just going to stop there. If anyone has any questions, I can take a little bit of time. I'd also like to announce that I'm now taking questions over the internet. I have this new project going on the internet, on YouTube, called Ask a Monk, where if you have any questions on Buddhism or meditation, you can log on to my YouTube channel, and that's, I'll give that here. And once if you leave questions, I'll answer them in the form of videos, so that way other people can hear them as well. And if you want to go directly to the questions, they're at the second link. But you can you can ask questions directly on my YouTube channel, so that's probably the best avenue to go. Okay, so oh, sorry, I just got turned off my speech. So the second link there is if you want to go directly to the list of questions, but you can ask questions on my YouTube channel as well. So that's probably the best link to go. Okay, so that's all for the speech today.